We're very happy this morning to have with us our speaker from last night's wild game dinner, Ray Howell. He is here with his wife, Karen, and we're just very pleased to have them with us today. Let's give Ray a warm Antrim welcome as he comes to our place.
Thank you, Brother Rob. Wonderful. I'm from Minnesota, the southeastern part of Minnesota. Actually live on the border of Wisconsin and Iowa. And my wife, our 9 children, and now we have 42 grandchildren. it's pretty awesome. Most of them live around us. And I normally will get into a lot of trouble around Christmas and Thanksgiving, because when we all get together, we tear it up. And I've got some grandsons that they're huge. I mean, they used to be little guys. I used to be able to throw them around and play games with them. And man, we took a picture at Christmas. I look like a runt standing next to my grandsons. So all I can tell you is God has blessed me. When I was 5 years old, I had a lot of joy in my life. I mean, I was really a lot of fun with my brothers and sisters, my dad and my mom, and all the things it was to be a family. And really, my dad was just really awesome, because we got to play a lot of games with Dad, and every day was wonderful. My mom took care of us, and she was special, but there was just something really awesome about Dad coming home every day. And when he hit the door, us kids, we'd tackle him. He'd throw us around and playing games. And those are just wonderful, joyful memories in my life. I remember dragging on the floor, hanging onto his feet, and my brothers and sisters climbing all over him and hooting and hollering. And, you know, every day we stood at the window waiting for him to come home, because we're going to have fun. And weekends, when he didn't have to work, he got to be with us. And we got to be with him. And it was just fun. And the one day when I was in the hallway, I went around to see my mom and dad, because I could hear them talking. And the words that he said were still in my heart. And he said, "I'm leaving." And when he said that, I knew he was telling the truth. He said it in a different voice. He wasn't the happy, cheerful person. And I ran out and hid into the back seat of the car, because I wasn't going to let my dad go without me. And it wasn't very long, they found me in the back seat of the car. And when they found me, they grabbed me by the feet and pulled me out of the car. And I'm telling you, I was kicking and screaming at the top of my lungs, "Dad, don't go without me." And they pulled me out on the ground. My dad was a different person. He wasn't the fun guy. He gets into the car, didn't say much at all, and car door slammed me, drove down the road. And the worst part about it all was standing at the window with my brothers and sisters for weeks to come, waiting for Dad to come home. He never showed up again. My grandfather, about a month later, came to the door, and I met him, and he was with my grandma, and it was kind of interesting. He was real tall, and she was shorter. And he said, "I'm going to pack you kids up with your mom. You're going to come live with us." And my grandpa became my dad. He became my hero. He became somebody I really looked up to. And, you know, I had a lot of fun with my grandpa, because he treated me like somebody. And I got to go fishing. I got to go and play sports at school. I had somebody that had my back. And he even bought me my first bicycle. He bought me a Schwinn bicycle. I mean, the memories. At the age of 12 years old, my grandma and my mom sat us down, because my grandpa was sick, but I thought he had the flu or something, and he said he had a thing called crawling stomach cancer. Well, my grandpa's a big, tough guy, and to me, I mean, it's just, he's sick. But what ended up happening is my grandpa kept getting sicker and sicker and losing a lot more weight. It wasn't very long, and he was in bed most of the time. And then they said we were going to take him to the hospital. And to me, as a kid, a young man, you know, okay, we'll get him to the hospital, give him a few shots, he's going to get all fixed up, and he's coming back home, because they're going to make him better. And, you know, I went to the hospital after school to visit my grandpa. And one day I went to the hospital, they wouldn't let me in the room, because my grandpa had passed away. You know, so this joy that I had at 5 years old, and then again up till I was 12, now there was another dark cloud, the same kind of confusion that my mom had, and there was not so much focus on the kids as there was what are we going to do next, and that came with my grandma and my mom both. I mean, the leader in the family was gone, and my grandpa was gone, and now there was money, and there was all kinds of different things for them to be focused on. And so as kids, we're doing what we normally do, and my mom and grandma were busy with trying to make ends meet, and we were on the streets. And what happened as a young man and not having a man in your life that's got your back, your dad or your grandpa or even a big brother, there's bullies out there. And there's people out there that just for no reason are mean and evil. And I got beat up all the time for no reason. I was just not a very big kid and got teased and got picked on. And I didn't have somebody to put their hand on my shoulder and say, leave my son alone. And a couple times I got beat up really bad, even to the point that I didn't want to go to school no more. And it wasn't that I didn't like school or learning. I just didn't like the troubles at school. And so I started hanging around with other kids that were in the same situation as me. And those kids, you know, were on a different path. They were all smoking cigarettes and having parties and drinking and carrying on. And there's girls and there's all kinds of stuff out there. And I started skipping school because I didn't like school. I started not going home because I didn't want to explain to my mom and my grandma why I was skipping school. Next thing you know, I'm on the streets quite a bit doing whatever I wanted to do. And it just kept opening up to more and more stuff that you could get into. And it wasn't very long, and I was completely out of control. And I wasn't a bad kid. I was just a kid on the streets. And I went home one day to see my mom and my grandma, and there was some strange people in the house. And one guy was a big, tall, intimidating guy, and he said, Raymond, sit down. And he pointed at the chair. I can still remember him saying it in that voice he had. And when we sat down in a chair, I didn't know what was going on. And they explained to me, Ray, your brothers and sisters and you are totally out of control. You're not listening to your grandma or your mom. Therefore, we got new homes for you that will get us so that we can keep you in line. So, just like that. It was done. They walked my brothers and sisters and I out the door. We went in two different cars, and I went to a farm up at home in Wisconsin that was a work farm. And my routine was to get up every morning and do chores. I milked cows, and then you went to school smelling like a cow, and I came home and I milked cows. And I liked the work, don't get me wrong, but the people that I lived with and the other young men that were at that farm, I felt the people didn't care about me. The young men that were at the farm, a lot of them really had some troubles. They were the kind of kids you wouldn't want your kids to hang around with. And the stuff that they had gotten in trouble with, it was bad stuff. So every day, that was my routine. And it got to the point where I'd go to school and listen to the kids tell about how they got to go hunting and fishing and got to be with their dads or their uncles or their grandpas and do this stuff. It was a nightmare to listen to that. I didn't get to do it. I had to work all the time. Well, one day the school bus pulled up to the school. Everybody got off the bus. They went into the building, and I took off. And I'll tell you what, I got my freedom back. I took off and went back to the area where all my friends were at, and I started hanging around with them down on the beach down there, partying again and doing all the things I was doing. I was not imprisoned into this life. You see, there was no walls or no bars or barbed wire around me. I was in a life that I was imprisoned in. It wasn't my fault that I was there. I just didn't have a man in my life that could keep me on the right path. I hated that life I was in, but now I'm free again. I'm out there goofing around with friends. About a week went by, and the police picked me up. Instead of going back to the foster home, they took me to jail. For truancy, they gave you 3 days off of school. Well, they're going to teach me a lesson and put me in jail for 3 days and then take me back home because they figured that would keep me from running away. And I sat in jail for 3 days, 13, 14-year-old kid, and went back to the foster home, doing the same routine every day. And I tell you what, it didn't teach me a lesson at all. It made me hate things even more, even to the point that I started getting where I didn't care about myself, didn't care about the way I lived. I certainly had so much rejection in my life that I didn't think anybody really cared about me except my mom. And so every opportunity I had, I ran away from school. And I ran away from the foster home. And I got picked up, taken to jail for 3 days, back to the foster home. And the fifth time I ran away was pretty eye-opening. I went down to see my mom because that's the only person that I felt loved me. And I went down to see my mom, and when I was at her house, the police showed up. They got the back door and the front door covered. I can't get out. And they picked me up. Next thing you know, I'm in the squad car going back to jail. And on the way in that squad car, I think, how in the world did they catch me so quick? And it hit me. It was my mom that called the police. And you know, that ride to jail and being in jail for the first few hours was really, really hurtful because now I have nobody in my life. Now, I want you to know my mom did it for my own good. But as a kid looking at it from the other way, I was totally rejected by everybody. Nobody cared about me. And I was going to go back to some imprisoned life where I just didn't want to be. And at this point, I didn't care if I lived or died anymore. I really didn't. Life was not fun. And I remember that night kneeling down on a concrete floor, leaning up against a steel bed, and I prayed to a God I didn't know. And I was uncontrollably crying. Lord, would you please put somebody in my life that no matter what happens would never leave me? And it was just wishful praying and wishful thinking. Because in 3 days' time, they're going to come and pick me up again, and I'm back into the same life again. And I didn't want it no more. And I had made a plan in those 3 days' time that I wasn't going to go back to the foster home. I didn't care. And no matter what, I was going to take off running. So when they take you home, they put you in a car, and they drive you back to the foster home. My plan was the first stop sign that I could get out of that car and take off running. That's what I'm going to do. So I'm sitting in there for 3 days thinking about what I'm going to do. And I'm scared to death. I really am, because I don't know what's in front of me. But it didn't really matter anymore. That's what I kept telling myself. So for 3 days, that's all I thought about was running. Where am I going to go? Because I'm heading to the big cities now. I don't even know where I'm going. I'm not going to go where anybody knows me, because I want to start a different life. And I want to try to be in a life where I'm free and not imprisoned, and somebody that's going to care for me. Well, I'm sitting there. The third day is there. I get up in the morning. I had the worst taste in cornflakes and coffee, every bad stuff in jail. And I sat at the steel bench waiting for that big door to open up. And on that bench, there was some magazines, and there was a magazine I hadn't seen before. And I looked at a magazine, and I opened up, and it's a magazine about the outdoors and hunting. And in there was pictures of moose and elk and bears. And man, you know, all of a sudden I'm looking at this magazine and I am pulled out of the depression that I'm in. And I'm looking at something. Boy, is Africa and Canada and Alaska, are they real? Do people really get to do this stuff? Is there really animals like this walking around? And I'm looking at this here and kind of reading some of the stuff in there. And all of a sudden, that big door opens up, and it makes a lot of noise when it opens, and there he's standing there. And just the words that I wanted to hear, come on, Ray, I got to take you back home. That's when the nightmare started again. So I walked out the door. I followed him to his car, and I got in his car, and now we're driving down the road, and I'm looking for the stop sign. I'm scared to death. And I'm looking for a stop sign. I know I'm not saying nothing to him, and I'm quiet. And he says to me, he says, Ray, I seen you reading a hunting magazine in there. He said, do you like hunting? And I'm a tough kid. I'm not supposed to be talking to a parole officer or somebody from the sheriff's department. I looked at him and said, yeah, I'd like to go hunting sometime. And then he said to me, he said, you promise me that you don't run away from your foster home again. I'm going to help find you a better place to live. And in the meantime, I'll take you hunting with me and my sons. Now, I looked at him, and I've had people say, Monterey, I'm going to take you hunting and fishing and never show up. I've had that happen. I looked at him, and maybe because I was scared to death of where I was going to go or what I was going to do, and I made that promise. I said, yeah, I promise you. I said, I'd like to go hunting with you. And he took me back to the foster home. Same routine. Got up every morning, milking the cows, going to school, smelling like a cow, come home, milk the cows. And it was a couple weeks went by, and my foster mother walked up to me, and she said, Ray, Tom is coming over on Friday. He wants to take you hunting with him and his sons. And I'll tell you what, the dream that I had was coming true. I really am going to get to go hunting. That was the only thing that was holding me there at the foster home. I didn't run away again. I stayed to my promise, and that this guy is really going to come true. And he showed up, and I got in the car with him and his sons, and we went to a cabin out in the middle of nowhere. And in that two-day weekend, my life was changed completely. And I'll tell you, the stories that were told in front of the campfire and shooting a bow and the possibilities of actually seeing a deer in the woods, I mean, it was so uplifting. And I remember waking up I really didn't go to sleep that night. I had no hunting clothes on, and I stayed up all night because I couldn't wait to get out in the woods and really see critters. And I remember 4:30 in the morning, the alarm clock went off, and Tom comes out of the room, and his sons come out of the other rooms. The doors are banging and stuff. Come on, we got to go. This is tradition, Ray. And they ran out the back door, ran right off the dock, and jumped in the lake. It's pitch black outside. It's 4:30 in the morning. These guys are jumping in this cold water. Come on, you got to jump in here with this tradition. And you guys are crazy. I ain't jumping in that cold water. I mean, this is going through my head. I'm standing by the dock watching this. These guys are crazy. I mean, what a wonderful bunch of guys, people. And it wasn't very long I jumped in there with them. And I want to tell you something. At that part of it is when I really became a part of their family. I mean, we became friends. And I trusted them. I saw my first white-tailed deer that weekend. And I had so many things go on that weekend that it really did change my life. But the most important thing that had happened was the talk I had with Tom on my way back to the foster home. He told me, he said, you're 14 years old, you'll be 18 soon. Well, from 14 to 18 is a long time back then. And he said, when you turn 18, you get to have your own job and make your own money. You can have your own family, and you can go hunting. You're American, you're free, nobody can take that from you. You just got to hold on for a little while. And, you know, I only went hunting with Tom four times during my high school career. But I had somebody I could talk to, I had somebody I trusted, and I had somebody that presented a dream to me that I wanted to follow. And I'll tell you, when I was 18 years old, it was like somebody let the cat out of the bag. I'm going to tell you, I wanted it all. I was going to school, I was working two jobs, I got married 1 month after I turned 18, and I got to go hunting. Everything he told me was coming true. I was no longer imprisoned into any kind of a life except chasing my dreams. And 1 year after I got married, God blessed me with a little baby girl, and I named her Danielle. I got to name her, and I got to have a little baby, I got to be a dad. All of you men that are here know what it's like to be a dad. I got to be a dad. What a gift. I looked at her, and I'm holding her in my hands, and I said, I'm going to give you everything I didn't have, but most of all, you're going to have a dad. And, you know, as things are going, that year I harvested my first deer with a bow. I was telling about it. I was so proud of that deer. It was in the wintertime. I put the deer in the back of my car, and I drove around with that deer for a week on the back of my car. I'm so proud of it. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I'm living the dream. And by the time I'm 23 years old, I now have 5 children. And they're popping out left and right. I don't know what's going on. So I did something that was really bold because I couldn't make ends meet. I was working so hard, I couldn't make enough money. I decided to go into business myself because I couldn't do any worse working for somebody else. My grandfather was the biggest influence in my life, and he had a business at one time. I said, well, my grandpa did it, I'm going to do it. And you know, I started the business, and I want you to know it was the fear of failure that made me succeed. I was not going to not have food on the table for my children. And I worked really, really hard. It was no 40 hours a week. It was whatever it took. And you know, the business started to grow, and I was working really hard. The kids were getting bigger, and and I think because I was so focused on the business and what I was doing with the kids with school and so on and so forth, I kind of maybe didn't have enough focus on what was going on with my wife at the time. And I got the worst phone call in the world from my sister-in-law, and my wife had found greener pastures, and it was done with. She didn't want to be married to me no more, and there was nothing I could do about it. Now I'm in the same situation that my dad was in. And I find out it took two. And my wife, she left me. She left me, and I was Mr. Mom. I had five kids. I had a business to run. I had a lot of bills, a lot of things going on. And I want you to know the business suffered because I spent so much time with my kids. That part of having that partner was gone, and I had to make up for it. And so God had a plan for me and my life. Well, there was a lot of things I had to go through to learn. And one day, many years later, my daughter, Tammy, who's still got me wrapped around a little finger, said, "Dad, my friend Stephanie, his mom, is really a wonderful person. How about if we go to a movie with him?" And I wanted nothing to do with dating anybody because I didn't have time to do anything except be a dad and run a business. Anyway, because Tammy's got me wrapped around little finger, I found myself at a movie theater with a beautiful woman by the name of Karen in the middle of a popcorn fight. And I'll tell you something, it was just unbelievable, all the things that had happened. And when I met her, she was so different from anybody else I had ever met, I could not put a finger on what it was. But I do know now what it was. And many years later, I asked her to marry me. And when I asked her to marry me, I thought I had made a mistake because now I've opened myself up for rejection and troubles again. But I found that Karen loved the Lord more than she loved me. And I don't even know how she married me. I'm so focused on business and making money and doing all these things, and yet she fell in love with me. And quite a few years later, she said something to me that really changed my life. See, I was so driven at all these things that I was doing. She said, "Ray, I came into your life to help save you." I just about snapped because I'm making the money. I'm giving her everything. She's got a house, cars, all the stuff there is. And I knew that she loved the Lord more than she loved me, and I was a little jealous of that. But in reality, going forward, the day I gave my heart to the Lord was a day that, and a moment that really changed my life. My wife planted the seeds. She showed me what real love was. And she showed me a life where there was no taking off as soon as there was money troubles or all the different things. As a matter of fact, I was so upset one day about something. I can't remember what it was. And my wife looked at me and she goes, You ogre, you." She called me an ogre. I started laughing. I said, "Is that the best you can do?" And, you know, this is a whole different life for me. And through the things that I was doing, the business became very successful. I had made a lot of money. I started chasing my dreams all over the world with a bow in my hand. And I got involved in the sport of powerlifting because I didn't want to be picked on anymore by bullies. And in all those things, I really started to really excel in. I found that through hard work and persistence, and it wasn't how good I was at anything, I could accomplish my dreams. It only took one time to do it right. And those things happened with making money and keeping the cash flow coming. It happened with chasing an animal. There wasn't in pursuing that dream. It was persistence that paid off. And in the sport of drug-free powerlifting, it was any time that you got beat, you went back at it. And one day you only had to do it right one time. And I ended up actually got to compete at the Worlds for the United States, a kid from a broken home. And I ended up, and I'm not bragging, I worked at it hard. I ended up winning the 242-pound class for the United States. And I stood right up there on the podium with my wife. I couldn't believe it. So everything that Tom Pokey told me has come true, much more. The day I gave my heart to the Lord, all these accomplishments I did, I realized that it really was meaningless and chasing the wind. But on the other hand, God allowed all these things to happen to prepare me for something that he had for me. And the moment I gave my heart to the Lord, I asked God to forgive me for my sins. I asked him to guide me, and I had made my second promise. I promise that I will follow you. And you know, he told me through the Holy Spirit that had entered me that all the trophies on my wall, when I died, someday they're going to be on somebody else's wall. My name's not even going to be on them. So what I accomplished there? Nothing. All the money I had in the bank, I didn't even know who my friends were. And they had my money spent. I wasn't even dead yet. I couldn't take the money with me. So what I accomplished there? The records that I had set in powerlifting. I wanted to be the strongest man in the world. I wanted to set records that nobody could break in drug-free competition. And I want you to know, I knew at that moment that somebody had a little better technique or a little better day than me and worked it as hard as they did, they were going to break my record. And those records have been broken. So my name's not even in the record books. What did I accomplish there? Nothing but for Ray Hall. I knew exactly what I had to do. It was in my heart that I've only got this much time on this earth. I don't know if I got tomorrow or not. And tomorrow or not is my grandpa passed away from cancer at a young age. I had friends that were in car accidents, and they were gone. Other people that something's happened that they can't think right no more. I don't know if I got tomorrow or not. I had to tell my wife what I did. I walked up to Karen, and I told her, today I gave my heart to the Lord. I'm not going back to the business the way I did. I'm not going to be setting records anymore, and the Lord's going to provide for us. I'm going to go forward and let every kid know that no matter what their problems are, God's got a purpose for them. It's not the garbage on the street. There was a few things that had happened to me before I gave my heart to the Lord that were so impactful and so humanly impossible to do that he revealed those things to me, and I knew the truth. And when I said that to Karen, she looked at me and she said, Ray, you do what you think is best, and I'm sticking with you. And I'm going to tell you something. When I was 14 years old, in jail, kneeling down on that concrete floor, praying and asking to put somebody in my life that no matter what would happen would never leave me, I had no idea the gift that he gave me in marriage. No matter what the storms have been, she's been by my side. And you know, to have a warrior bride that will help you through this life, you know, it's been amazing. And how I learned about this is I started having Bible studies with my wife. The moment, that day when I gave my heart to the Lord, I wanted to find out why it was so impactful. Why was it so deep? Why did I make this decision? Why did I make that promise? I couldn't go back on my promise. I started having Bible studies with her. And within 3 months, I want to tell you, my life changed completely. I knew that with this ring, it was a symbol of a gift that he'd give me. It's not a wedding ring. And, you know, the gift of salvation. I knew that the moment that I leave this earth, that I'm going to spend eternity in heaven with our Heavenly Father. And he told me and showed me and gave me the vision on how to do Kicking Bear. As a matter of fact, Dennis, would you show that little... I have a film that shows Kicking Bear and what we do throughout the nation with it. Would you show that for a second? This is kind of amazing. Hey!
nationwide faith-based youth program that encourages sportsmen and women to get involved with today's youth. The campouts, shoots, and other events are a great way to introduce youth to God's great outdoors and to the sport of archery. All Kicking Bear events are provided free of charge to everyone who wishes to participate. The program's mission is to help underprivileged and at-risk youth, or any youth, to have an opportunity to get into the outdoors by encouraging others to reach outside their homes. Kicking Bear promotes mentoring for kids who might not otherwise have the opportunity to hunt, fish, or shoot archery. Putting a bow in their hands and a dream in their hearts, Kicking Bear helps change kids' lives forever.
Last year, we did 122 events throughout the United States. The average event was about 600 people, and not one person or a kid paid a dime to be a part of those events. The follow-up on those events is we find out what kids were in the same situation that I was in, and we take them on fishing and hunting trips, and we introduce them to mentors, and we get them off the streets, and we let them know that no matter what their problems are, God's got a purpose for them, and it's not the garbage on the streets. And you know, the amazing thing, I can tell you, I am not smart enough, I am not tough enough, and I am not good enough to pull off what's going on. And yet, I witness it every weekend that all these people come to an event, and they get to hear about our Lord and Savior. And there's decisions for Christ. And there's follow-up with our brothers and sisters who are there to help disciple. And so I want to kind of leave you with a few things that I learned. So I'm running around with a bow in my hand, and I'm chasing my dreams. I'm setting records in powerlifting, and I'm making money. All those things were things that I had to learn to equip me so that I could be the head of the ministry that God has called me to. And you know, for whatever reason, I love doing Bible studies with my wife, and you men and women that are not having Bible studies with your spouse, you're missing out. You are really missing out. This thing is alive. Just starting in Proverbs every day and learning wisdom and what's going to happen and how you do things and working together, it really takes the little problems out of your life, and you're standing there together with the big problems that come in, the storms that are big. And there's big storms. There's Goliaths coming at us every day. And you know, so one day I'm studying with my wife, and I'm studying about the staff of Moses. And I'm thinking, man, I don't even know why I got studying about it. But I'm thinking, you know, when Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt, he had that staff. And with that staff, there was a lot of things that were being done. It turned into a snake and all these different miracles. He got the Red Sea and the Red Sea parted and there was battles. And when Moses held that staff up, they win the battle. And there was brothers that stood alongside him to help it hold it up. And I'm trying to figure out what happened to that staff. Because anybody that saw that staff and saw the things that were going on would want to have that staff because they would be rich. They could have anything they wanted, right? And that's the truth of it. And, you know, I found that Aaron's staff was in the Ark of the Covenant. I really couldn't figure out where Moses' staff went. And it got to where I read about Gideon and a staff that he had. And he wanted to know if God was real because God was calling him to fight a battle. An angel shows up and takes his staff, touches the offering, and the offering burns up, and Gideon knows. And the story going forward is amazing what God did in his life with him. And they won the battles. And so I'm trying to figure out what happened to staff. And a couple months went by, and I'm sitting in my office, and Pastor Mark Clements walks in, and he starts talking about my bow. He says, Ray, he says, all the things you did with the bow, he said, and shooting film canisters at 100 yards and shooting targets at 300 and some yards, he said, God put that staff in your hand so that you could change people's lives. I said, what did you say? He said, God put that staff in your hand to change people's lives. It hit me so hard. You see, I want you to know God has equipped each and every one of us with special gifts. Our only job here on earth is to be disciples, to make disciples. The interesting thing where the mission statement of Kicking Bear is to put a bow in a kid's hand and lead their family to the Lord one-on-one. Give them a staff. And so, going forward in my studies, I'm the spiritual leader of my family. We have 42 grandkids. I'm traveling all over the world doing what I'm called to do, and it's hard managing both of them. But the Lord put it in my heart. He said, 5 minutes after those kids are out the door, I can't protect them. The only way I can protect my children, my grandchildren, and my great-grandchildren is to make sure that they have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Because if they are out on the streets and something bad happens, there's nothing I can do about it. If they go home, they go home. But I want you to know that when he put that in my heart to make sure that they had a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, the kingdom of heaven is theirs, and it's theirs for eternity, and I will spend eternity in heaven with our Savior, my children, my grandchildren, and my great-grandchildren. And that's the only way we can protect them. So, a strand of three holds a marriage together. The only thing that my dad did wrong and what I started out doing wrong is I wasn't having Bible studies with my wife. And I want you to know the truth of it. After having Bible studies, and just this morning I learned, you want to learn everything there is about this gift. She told me she was a wrangler when she was younger, and she took these horses out and she guided people. I didn't know that. I want to know everything there is to know about this gift that was given to me. Get into Bible studies with your wife, and your life is going to change within just a few months, and you'll see this joyous gift that God has given you. And so I want to leave you with that. And Rob, this music and the singing, I mean, it's so uplifting. I'm looking forward to hearing some more. So thank you very, very much for the opportunity for my wife and I to be here and share with you and what God has done in my life. It may seem like things were pretty tough when I was a kid, but these two gifts that he's given me, he has repaid me 1,000 times over for every bit of trouble, every bit of rejection, everything that has gone on backwards. And every time I put my hand in my wife's hand, he reminds me of the gift that he's given me. So thank you for the blessing of being here.